Six people, including three children and a fire chief, are killed in an accident east of Helena. Good evening, I'm Conrad Scheid.
And I'm Corin Cates Carney, and that's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition. And a respected Montana photographer is murdered in Billings.
And Senator John Tester weighs in on Iraq, the Veterans Administration, and former Governor Brian Schweitzer's recent controversial remarks. A fire engine and a pickup truck collided on a highway in southwestern Montana, causing an explosion and fire that killed six people, including the fire chief and three Helena children. There were no survivors. Jefferson County Sheriff's Deputy Bob Gleich said a Three Forks fire engine heading east on U.S. Highway 12 collided with a westbound pickup around 9 o'clock last night about 10 miles east of Helena, forcing both vehicles into the ditch. The vehicles immediately caught fire, and Gleich said the wreckage, quote, was just all melted together, unquote. Montana Highway Patrol Captain Gary Becker said the crash killed the driver of the fire truck, along with a Helena couple and their three children in the pickup truck. The Gallatin County Sheriff's Office said Three Forks Fire Chief Todd Rummel was one of the victims.
And in other news from around the state, well-known landscape and outdoors photographer Michael S. Sample was stabbed to death yesterday near his office in downtown Billings. Police have a suspect in custody. Lieutenant Jeremy House says Sample was stabbed around 1:30 p.m. Thursday and died of his injuries at the hospital. He was 66 years old. Yellowstone County Coroner Chad Fair identified the victim and said an autopsy is planned on Monday. Officers took 23-year-old Zachariah James Wiseman into custody shortly after the stabbing. He's being held on suspicion of deliberate homicide. County Attorney Scott Twitto said Wiseman likely will make his first court appearance next week. William Snyder, a friend and colleague of Sample's for nearly 40 years, first met the photographer during his tenure as editor and publisher for Montana Outdoors magazine. Sample often contributed photographs for the publication. Snyder and Sample also used to share an office close to where Sample was stabbed.
Well, Mike was a spectacular photographer, and he had his style that really was different than a lot of other photographers. It was more of a subtle, trying to really capture the essence of the state.
Sample's images of Montana have also appeared in books including Montana, The Last Best Place, published in 1992, as well as a popular Montana calendar he published for more than 30 years.
He didn't have people in his photos very often. It was mainly landscape, subtle colors, probably a little bit more what you'd say on the artistic side, instead of trying to do the wow factor, showstopper type of dramatic photo. It was more of a kind of a soft edge to it. The people that liked it really liked it.
Sample also collaborated with Billings Gazette photographer Larry Mayer in Montana on My Mind, published in 1987.
Senator John Tester continues his statewide listening tour to hear from Montana veterans about how to improve care at the Veterans Administration. The VA has been rocked by recent reports of mismanaged care and falsified data, leading to the deaths of vets waiting for care. Tester was in Missoula today for his second listening session at the Missoula College. The first session was held in Anaconda. In this interview with Edward O'Brien, Tester talks about the VA scandal, the rapidly deteriorating situation in Iraq, and former Montana Governor Brian Schweitzer's recent and controversial comments about Eric Cantor and Dianne Feinstein. First, though, here's more on what he hopes to gain from and what he's heard so far on this VA listening tour.
What we hope to get from them is where the challenges are, where the vets are having their challenges with the VA, and then also what's good about the VA. I mean, what's working? What should we leave alone? What should we not touch? And the one last week was very informative, as they all are, in that the veterans said, you know, we've got to do a better job of recruitment of healthcare folks, whether those are doctors, nurses, or administrative folks, because we need more of them. And then there were some other issues that came up about timely payments to outside folks, like if they went to a doctor, for example, and maybe had a knee replacement or something like that, the payment to those hospitals and those docs was lagging. And those are just two things that came up. But we were there for about 45 minutes or an hour and listened to the vets, and then had a nice visit to before and after that with some of them individually. And then my staff stayed around for another hour after that to get the folks who were shy, I didn't want to speak in front of everybody. And so we got a good cross-section, I think, of information, I think, as we build on each one of these as we go around the state and have them repeatedly, I think we're going to end up with some good information that we can help make the VA even better from a policy standpoint in Washington, D.C. Now, all that being said, Ed, this next week we're going to be working on a VA bill in conference committee that I think is going to move the VA forward. But I don't think that should be the end of the situation. I think we need to continue to get that bill passed and then work on things to improve the VA even more.
It sounds like it's going to be a long haul regardless.
No, it is, and it's going to cost some money. I mean, I think this bill that we passed out of the Senate that's going to conference is about $35 billion. That's real money. Healthcare is expensive. And for the folks who served in the military that have earned this health care, we owe it to them. And it's a cost of war that needs to be factored in every time we deploy folks. And oftentimes it never is.
Speaking of war, Iraq seems to be crumbling, falling to pieces. You were quoted this week as saying, get our troops home, get our people out of there. They've been fighting for 2,000 years. We are going to stop them.
That's pretty close to what I said, and that's the way I feel. Unless we want to make a commitment to Iraq like we have to Korea, which I don't think we can afford, I think that we can settle it down. We showed it. I mean, the troops went in there. They settled the country down, and it was peaceful for a while. And the minute we remove, they go right back to fighting again. And I think that we can send troops in. I heard the president's going to send 300 advisors now. And we can send troops in, and we can do airstrikes, and we can do all that stuff. But I believe that once we pull out, it'll go right back to what it was before. And so Maliki had a great chance. The president of Iraq had a great chance to build the kind of coalitions that he needed to do to stand this country up, and he refused to do it. And so you go right back to what it was before we got there with violence. I just think that when we're talking about $17 trillion in debt, which is what this country is, a lot of folks back in Washington, D.C., and a lot of the fiscal hawks never talk about the cost of war. And we put it on a credit card, and it's just a crazy way of doing business. And I think there's a monetary cost and there's a people cost. The reason we're talking about the VA is because we've got folks coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan that have serious, serious injuries, and we need to help them. So I just don't see the sense of putting a bunch more money into Iraq when I think when we pull out again, it'll go back to the same old thing because they've been doing it for centuries.
So all those lives, all those limbs, all that treasure, we just ceded to the likes of ISIS?
Oh, no. I don't see it that way at all. I think the soldiers went in, and it's true we went in under false pretenses, but I will tell you the soldiers went in, they helped stabilize that country and gave them a chance to have a peaceful country, and they've chosen not to do that, and there's not much we can do about that. But the truth is that those soldiers did a great job. I don't think there's any sacrifice in vain there at all. We did our best job to try to help straighten things out, and it didn't work out, and that's just the way it is. I don't think we should continue down the line because history will repeat itself as it has done in the past.
It could end up affecting gas prices back here at home, though.
Well, I mean, it could. I mean, but really the bottom line is that we need to continue on developing energy sources across the board, renewable, conventional, all the above. And this just shows you why we need to continue to do that. We cannot take our foot off the gas feed just because we got some oil coming out of the ground in the Bakken. We need to continue to do everything we can do for conservation and developing energy sources to broaden the portfolio so that energy does remain affordable.
Gallup finds Americans' confidence in Congress has hit a historic low. 7% now of Americans saying they have quite a lot of confidence. Boy, what's that tell you?
Well, it tells me that I want to find the 7% because I wouldn't be a part of it. I think it's very frustrating right now. I think it has a lot to do with our election system and the amount of money that's put into these campaigns and how long they are and how hostile the campaigns are. And then you go back, that kind of continues on through into Congress. And it is very political there right now. Politics always trumps policy, it seems like to me. And I think it's very unfortunate because there's a lot of issues out there, whether it's Iraq or whether it's a highway bill or whether it's redoing infrastructure for sewer and water with an energy and water bill that we didn't take up this week. There's just a lot of things that need to be done that we're not doing because politics is getting in the road of our work. So I'm part of the 93% that says it's dysfunctional.
Last question. Former Governor Schweitzer this week made some headlines with his comments about Mr. Cantor setting off his gaydar, Senator Feinstein comparing her to a hooker. He's apologized, but what did he do to himself and his political future, do you think?
Well, I don't think he helped his value much with that stuff. I'm not, I don't know why he did what he did, because he's a smart guy, maybe the best on-the-ground politician I've ever seen. But I think it was a big mistake, and I think he's realized that now. And look, Brian did a great job for the state, but I guess everybody does silly stuff once in a while, and he just did it.
Montana Senior Senator Democrat John Tester, thank you so much, sir.
You bet.
Senator Tester will join hundreds of participants at the Relay for Life in Missoula this evening from 6 to 6:30 at Big Sky High School. The event honors cancer survivors, their caregivers, and those who've died of the disease.
The suspect in Idaho bank robbery has been arrested in southwestern Montana. Anaconda police arrested 60-year-old Ronald Allen Shoemaker on Thursday on a warrant issued after a U.S. bank branch in Pocatello, Idaho was robbed. He remained jailed Friday in Anaconda on a $2,500 bond set in the warrant. Employees at the Pocatello Bank told police an intoxicated man entered the bank Tuesday afternoon, demanded money, and left with an undisclosed amount of cash. Shoemaker was traveling with his companion, 51-year-old John Stewart of Pocatello, also facing charges of felony possession of dangerous drugs after officers found methamphetamines in the vehicle. The Montana Standard reports one of the men told officers they were on their way to Butte to rob another bank.
Montana's seasonally adjusted unemployment rate fell 0.2 percentage points to 4.6% in May. Labor Commissioner Pam Busey said today the state's unemployment rate is now below average levels, which should drive wage growth over the next year. Montana's total employment, including agricultural and the self-employed, has increased by 10,000 this year, including 1,326 in May. The state has added 5,000 payroll jobs since January, including 300 private sector jobs in May. The U.S. unemployment rate held steady at 6.3%. Last month, Montana's unemployment rate is the 10th lowest in the country.
And now for the forecast for our listening area. West of the Divide tonight, expect partly cloudy skies with scattered showers and thunderstorms. Lows in the upper 30s to mid-40s. Saturday, look for partly cloudy skies with high in the 70s. On Saturday night, we'll continue to see partly cloudy skies with a chance of rain showers. Lows in the upper 30s to mid-40s. Sunday, look for more cloudy skies with a chance of rain showers in the morning. In central Montana tonight, we'll see mostly cloudy skies, and later in the evening, there'll be a chance of scattered showers and thunderstorms, lows 45 to 55. Saturday, expect partly cloudy skies, highs 65 to 75, and Saturday night, again, partly cloudy skies with a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms through the night, lows 45 to 50. On Sunday, we'll continue to see cloudy skies with a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms, highs 65 to 75. In southwest Montana tonight, look for mostly cloudy skies with scattered showers and thunderstorms high later on in the evening, then isolated showers and thunderstorms after midnight. Saturday, expect increasing clouds, a chance of thunderstorms in the afternoon, highs 65 to 75. Saturday night, again, mostly cloudy in the evening with a chance of showers and thunderstorms, lows 40 to 45. Sunday, you can expect partly cloudy skies and a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms. And now for the editorial comments of Katerina Werner.
It is an all too familiar story. A young girl with hopes for a better life and a brighter future. A girl desperately trying to escape the poverty she has experienced her whole life, the violence and abuse that surrounds her day in and day out. The girl is introduced to a man who promises her that he can turn her dreams into reality. A man who appears to truly care for her, who tells her he loves her and that all she needs to do is trust him and everything will be all right. And so she does. She obeys when he takes half-naked pictures of her and posts them online. She continues to believe that this is something he is doing for her, for them. When he convinces her to have sex in exchange for money, just once, and then twice. When she says no, he violently beats and threatens her. Throughout it all, she tells herself that this is all her fault, and all she needs to do is listen to him to make him happy. Because he loves her, even if it means sleeping with up to 5 different men a day. This is not the story of a Southeast Asian girl being sold in the streets of Thailand or the brothels of Vietnam. This is the story of a 16-year-old girl who lived here, in this beautiful state, Montana, Big Sky Country. It is the story of human trafficking, a human rights issue that knows no geographic location, ethnicity, race, or gender. Last year, the Global Slavery Index estimated that nearly 30 million people around the world are being trafficked. Human trafficking is modern-day slavery, and although it isn't legal anywhere in the world, it is thriving everywhere. In fact, more people are living in slavery right now than during any other point of human history. They work in the global sex industry, in pornography and prostitution. They offer their services at truck stops and in strip clubs, at hotels and through online escort services. In brothels and massage parlors, ranging from small towns on the Montana Highline and the Bakken oil fields to bustling metro centers around the globe. They are being held as domestic servants, as fishermen and boys, as workers in manufacturing and agricultural settings, and they are being hidden from public sight in kitchens, construction sites, and sweatshops. Traffickers and pimps prey on the most marginalized and oppressed members of our society. The vast majority of young girls and women working in the sex industry were victims of child sexual abuse, neglect, or other forms of trauma prior to recruitment. One of the greatest vulnerability factors, however, is age. The average age of entry into the commercial sex industry for young girls and boys in the United States is 12 to 14. Since it is an illegal industry, finding out just how many victims there are can be difficult. Conservative estimates say that 15,000 foreign nationals are trafficked into the U.S. annually, while others guess the number is as high as 60,000. It is also hard to pinpoint the profit being made each year, but it is safe to say that human trafficking is a booming business. According to the Department of Justice, sex trafficking is the fastest-growing business of organized crime in the U.S., with an estimated revenue of $32 billion annually. It is also the world's second largest criminal enterprise, second only to drugs. Contrary to drugs, however, selling humans comes with one major advantage. Drugs are sold once, whereas a person can be sold over and over again over long periods of time. Humans are reusable goods, and that is what makes the business of trafficking so lucrative. Pimps go where the money is, and thus the oil fields in the Bakken Formation of northeastern Montana and North Dakota are fertile ground for exploitation. With increased numbers of male workers in the boom towns of Sydney, Williston, and Minot, the ads on the website Backpage.com advertising female escorts rise as well. On any given day, anywhere from 50 to 150 girls and women can be found when clicking on the postings from Missoula, Billings, or Butte. They are posing scarcely dressed, stating that they are only in the area for a few days and are hoping to show you a good time. Most of them look like they are barely 18, painted smiles on their young faces, trying to hide the fear of the next customer. When explaining the billion-dollar business of human trafficking, one major party must not be forgotten: the demand. We know that as long as people are willing to pay for commercial sex, thereby fueling the demand, there will be a supply. Consequently, buyers of commercial sex enable the exploitation of children, youth, and vulnerable adults. However, trafficking also has a weak spot. It is a service industry that must intersect with the public. If customers can be held at bay, it will drive down the demand. The good news is that it is actually possible to combat this crime successfully and restore victims, bring perpetrators of slavery to justice, and protect communities by deterring trafficking. But we have to work together. One of the first steps is outreach and education about trafficking indicators. We only see what our eyes are trained to see. Thus, teaching people what to look for is key to addressing this epidemic. Educating law enforcement, social service professionals, and the public about trafficking will also ensure that girls and women forced into prostitution are treated as victims and not as criminals. And you can help by picking up the phone to call the National Human Trafficking Hotline, the YWCA Missoula Crisis Line, or simply 911 to report that you saw a young, unaccompanied minor female at the truck stop on I-90 in the middle of the night and something just didn't seem right to you. This is Katerina Werner, Domestic and Sexual Violence Program Manager with the YWCA Missoula. Thank you for listening.
Katerina Werner is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed don't necessarily represent those of this station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Conrad Scheid.
And I'm Corin Cates Carney. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend.